This is one of the few years that I'm okay with them telling everyone I'm a Cincinnati Reds fan. Been a long, long few years for us. Thank you all for being here. Hopefully all of you were in the panel this morning when you got to hear the subject of my research firsthand, who, by the way, happens to be seated in the back there. So if there was no pressure on me, you know, the fact that she's actually seated in the room while I'm talking about her, you know, not bad. But I want to get started. I want to make sure we have some opportunities for questions. First of all, some of you may be wondering, why do we have Amelia Earhart to start this presentation? Well, Amelia Earhart happens to be one of my all-time heroes. When I was in the eighth grade, an undiagnosed learning disability, so they sent me off to remedial reading. And so basically what that amounted to, they put us in a little room and they said, there are a bunch of little books up there and grab one and try to read it. So it wasn't very successful, but one of the books that I was able to read was the biography of Amelia Earhart. And I had been one of those kids that had played ball by myself way before Title IX. No opportunities to play, almost impossible to find a place to play the game. And it was devastating. It was devastating. I was the dumb kid. I was the one who, you know, had the wrong clothes. And, you know, it was just, life was not easy. Except when I was on a baseball field. I got home, ripped up that silly ass dress that my mother made me wear, went to school, and then put on some shorts and I took off down to the ball field. And there I was not the butt of jokes. No one made fun of me for being poor. No one made fun of me for the clothes I wore. No one made fun of me that I couldn't read. Instead, they said things to me like, so, can I be on your team today? Who's gonna pitch? What do you think we should do? There I was okay. And it wasn't okay anyplace else. I wasn't smart enough at 10, 11, 12, 13 years old to figure it out. And I turned over the back of that biography of Amelia Earhart and I read this quote. Some of us have great runways already built for us. If you have one, take off. But if you don't have one, realize it is your responsibility to grab a shovel and build one for yourself and for those who will follow after you. Let that sink in for a second. I said, yeah, even at that young age, I thought, okay, yeah, I get that. I don't know where the hell I'm supposed to get the shovel, but I get that. And I've been fighting to do that my whole life. And so at one point, a few years ago, I was sitting in Maybelle Blair's living room doing some preliminary interviews, and she was telling me about, I was born into baseball. My family created the Blair Nine. My brother and my father and me, we didn't have a ball diamond near where we lived in California, so we went across the street to a field and we built one of our own. And the kids, the girls in the fifth grade didn't have a team, the boys had a team, so what we did was we created one of our own. And it occurred to me, oh yeah, Maybelle Blair's been digging the runways for a long time. And I started thinking about not just Blair, but all these other women I know. Some of them at this conference, some of them long past, that have done all of these things just to create one more runway, just to create one more opportunity for one more girl, for one more person who didn't have that opportunity. So I started thinking about Blair's story within that context. When I read this quote to her, she said, yeah, I guess that's kind of what I've been doing, isn't it? Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. And at 96, she's still digging runways, by the way. So I recently signed a contract with Roman Littlefield to publish the biography of Maybelle Blair. And right, what you're going to hear today is a little bit of the work that I've done for that. The thread that runs through that project, the thread that I see that runs through the life of Maybelle Blair, obviously, is baseball. But it's also this. It's also about, there's no place to play? Well, let's create a place to play. There's nobody to play with? Well, let's go out and find somebody. If it doesn't work, then we're going to go out and make it work. That is the thread. But it is also a way for us to view from a different perspective. It's a way for us to view women's baseball history. Now, it's clear that Maybelle Blair's baseball experience is hers alone. But not only her baseball story, but the baseball story of the entire Blair clan is mixed up with and part of this quote. There's no place. Let's create a place. Blair's story gives us a way to look at the creative and determined ways in which women have historically bucked the system. The ways in which women or groups of women or teams of women have said, you know, well, yeah, we're not supposed to play on that field, so here, let's move over here and do this. Blair's story, as I said, is hers alone, but it also provides us with an example of the ways in which women never retreated. They never said, okay, we just won't play. Her story spans decades. But the story of women's baseball spans a lot more. Maybelle Blair's life in baseball gives us a snapshot of women's baseball in the 20th century and the vastly creative ways in which girls and women found ways to play, to coach, to umpire, to tend the fields, to be part of the game. Now, there were lots of examples of girls and women playing baseball in the 30s and then into the 40s. There were Bloomer Girl teams, there were traveling teams, there were all kinds of ways that girls might have seen other girls and women playing the game. For Blair, though, it was definitely family-oriented. Blair was an athlete. And no matter how hard her mother might have tried to turn her into a tennis player, she was not going to be a tennis player. She was going to be a baseball player. Because that's what the Blairs did. It was in her blood. In fact, she said to me at one point, oh yeah, I had to love baseball. I'm pretty sure that my mother's breasts had baseballs in them instead of milk. I can't believe she didn't share that one with you this morning. I'm glad she left that one for me. The point is, baseball was part of her family. Baseball was the crux of who the Blairs were. That's what she knew, and she was not going to stop and say, oh, okay, then I just won't play. She told us a little bit this morning about some of the ways in which she played on that field with her brother. Her brother would hook up the tractor or whatever and put Maybelle on the back of a piece of fence or whatever, and they would drag the field, and she learned to keep score because of him. Every single piece of their lives were tied up with baseball. And that's not an unusual story, right? I mean, that's true for a lot of people, boys and girls. But the other thing that's true is that for people like Maybelle, For people, for women who never took no for an answer, for people like Maybelle who were always digging the runway, you had to be creative and you had to be brave. And that is exactly what it took for her to say to her fifth grade teacher, "Hey, we think that we should have a girls' team too." There were times when she was a little bit older, she continued to play baseball whenever possible, and she continued to play softball because for the most part, those were the opportunities. And we talked a little bit about softball earlier today, and you know, no one is bashing softball. And those were the opportunities. And in many cases, some of the things that girls and women did was do the thing that was easy. And there were softball teams available. And if that's what you got to play, that's what you got to play. And certainly, Maybelle played a lot of softball. Now, some of these pictures of Blair playing softball are not necessarily in chronological order, but it is clear that these were talented and, if nothing else, well-dressed softball teams. Maybelle was like many girls of her generation. Many of the girls who ended up being in the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League played on these softball teams. Women's softball was extremely popular in the 1930s. In fact, I saw one statistic that in the 1939, that women's softball drew more fans than minor league baseball. Now, some of that is because there were teams everywhere, but it was strictly popular. And, as we know, girls and women were told, this is the game you get. You're not gonna play baseball unless you're doing it out on the street or with your family. So that's what they did. They played softball. And in fact, for Blair, even into World War II, she played softball. Now, I apologize for the fact that this picture, the bottom is cut off. But basically what this is, Blair played softball with Northrop Aircraft, where she ultimately worked for many, many years and then ultimately retired. This picture was taken because they had been planning to take a tour, I believe, into the South Pacific. Blair, you can wave at me if I'm wrong about that. They played softball games to entertain the troops. And one of the things that this picture was showing was they had signed a contract and they were hoping to go off and play softball for some of the troops. As it turns out, the war heated up and they ended up not going. But that's what this picture is. Women's softball was an extremely important form of entertainment during the war. Now, we're going to talk about the All-Americans in just a second, and that's a different situation. But Blair tells stories about playing softball all up and down the West Coast in California. Going to military bases, and at one point, a location where there were prisoners of war, German prisoners of war, and playing games as a form of entertainment. So that's what this picture represents, and honestly, one of the reasons I included it is because I just think it's so darn cute. And again, Maybelle was a very good softball player. As she told you this morning, she played for the Chicago Cardinals. She was able to find softball teams, baseball teams. She was good enough that they recruited her without question. But she also never stopped loving the game of baseball. And if you were there this morning, I think you probably got that message. She had the opportunity to play softball, and so she did, along with millions of other women. So she played that game because that was the game she could play. That is also part of this thread that runs through the story. that is also part of what's important about using her life and someone who understands the significance of continuing to create opportunities for others, for themselves and for others. That's one of the things that's so important about this. You can't play on a baseball team right now, let's say it's in the 1930s or 40s. So what you do is you then play on a softball team. And there are many examples of that. Well, it was while she was playing in Chicago that she was scouted by the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. I see I'm running out of time. Well, getting close anyway, so I'll speed this up a bit. Blair was recruited played in 1948 for the Peoria Red Wings. There she is as a Red Wing. As you know, the league, the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, was created in 1943 and lasted until 1954. That was, and as we learned from some other presentations, many of the women who played in that league were softball players. In fact, it was softball that those women played for the first several years. So there's no separating that. But they also then went on later and played baseball. So again, that's that continuum. But you know what? Mabel Blair did not stop digging baseball runways. The All-American League in the 1980s kind of got back together, created a Players Association, and then, of course, in 1992, the movie A League of Their Own came out, and those women, as they should have been, became superstars. At the reunions, they signed autographs. They understood the importance of their history. They understood how important it was for them to create additional opportunities. And it was from those conversations that in 2014, Mabel Blair, Shirley Berkovich, who we lost last year, Donna Cohen, myself, Mary Moore from the All-Americans, Karen Kunkel, a former All-American, and Jane Moffitt, a former All-American. We got together in 2014 and created the International Women's Baseball Center because we believe not only is the history of women's baseball important, but the future of it is important. And so the International Women's Baseball Center will be building a multi-million dollar facility in Rockford, Illinois. And one of the reasons is this picture you're looking at right here. That's Mabel and Shirley and their relationship with those young players. That relationship is the engine that drives it all. And you know what? Whether it's throwing out the first pitch, which she's done now several times, or hanging out with Major League Baseball's first female GM, Kim Ng. Blair didn't stop. She didn't stop when she was 80. She sure didn't stop when she was 90, and she's not stopping now. In fact, just a few years ago, she hooked up with the creators of the Amazon TV series, A League of Their Own, and helped to make that a very successful series. Coming out at age 95 on the stage of the Tribeca Film Festival, Mabel Blair is a superstar all over again. Her life represents what so many women in the field of baseball have always had to do, and that is keep digging that runway. Let's hope that she's digging that runway for decades to come. Thank you. Questions. if there are any. If anyone has a question, like I said, we don't have much time, so if you'd like to, if not, you aren't required to ask a question. Go ahead. Go ahead. I really don't. I mean, not that I am in any way opposed to that. It's just not really part of the conversation for me. I mean, it's an example of putting women on a field, on a court, on a, you know, and that's fantastic. Other questions? Yeah.
Basically, where is the building that you have to build?
That building will be on property that we own. At the intersection of Seminary and 15th Street, very connected to Byers Stadium, where the Peaches play. And by the way, just in case, a little commercial here, August 2nd and August 3rd, we will be hosting on Byers Field the U.S. Women's National Team for an exhibition game and an open practice free of charge. How cool is that, that the U.S. Women's National Team is going to play on Byers Field? Any other questions, comments, old business? Yeah.
So, this is for me, I'll do that. What was after the AHPBL?
I know, it's hard to say, isn't it? Well, and unfortunately, in a short presentation like this, there's only so much you can do, and I feel really stupid speaking when she's sitting back there. But the thing is, she continued to do that. When she went to work at Northrop Aircraft, she created the first women's team for Northrop, and they continued to play. And so then it was the next team and the next team. And so there are always those examples. And it's, as I said, it's kind of hard to give a lot of them here, but she never stopped doing that. And she's still doing that. Do you have a question? Yeah.
One of the great, like, kind of eternal life lessons of baseball is learning to persevere and deal with failure of all different kinds. And I felt there might have been a connection there between, you know, the importance of baseball in your life and its meaning and overcoming your learning disability.
Yeah.
So, I was wondering if you could talk about that.
Well, thank you for asking. Yes, I think it is crucial. And for me personally, which is different from Maybelle's story, of course, but baseball saved my life, literally, and because without it, I would not have survived adolescence. It was a placeholder. It was a place where I got that feeling, what it feels like to be okay, and until I figured it out, you know, it was my thing. It was my connection, and the thing that sort of moved that forward was July 4th, 1992. I was sitting in a movie theater, and for the first time, I watched women play professional baseball on a big screen, and I was awestruck. I cried, I was mad that I didn't know about it, but I was just awestruck. And that movie still has that impact. I'm 65 years old, and that movie still has that kind of impact on girls and women, and so does the TV series. And so, yeah, you know, the same things that boys, that we want boys and men to learn from playing sports, women learn them too, and it's important they have that access.
One more question. When can we expect the biography to be published?
It'll probably be at least a year. I have a deadline, which, but then the publisher, you know, they do their thing. So I'm thinking it will probably be in the early spring of 25. That's a guess. Yeah. Great.
If anyone has any more questions for you, you can see her in the hall on the side of the room. We got to get her for the next presentation. Thank you.